So your church has lots of visitors walking through the door, but they all seem to mysteriously vanish after that first Sunday. Well, you're not alone, because 91% of first-time visitors never come back for a second visit. And I think it's because a lot of churches are making the mistakes we're going to talk about in this video. Let's do this.
You're listening to the Reach Right Podcast, the show dedicated to helping your church reach more people and grow.
Well, hey guys, I'm Thomas.
And I'm Ian.
And today we're talking about why your visitors at your church never come back. Never is a little bit of a strong word, I think, probably, but
often don't come.
But the reality is pretty stark. I think sometimes, like, as pastors of churches, we have these very optimistic views. If I was just kind of ballpark it before I did the research on this, I would have said that, yeah, maybe half of our visitors come back a second time. But the actual numbers, like in surveys that have been done for churches, is that typically it's about 10% of first-time visitors come back for a second time. Not even the next week, but at any point they come back again. 10%, right? And some of the most successful churches that are really good at follow-up, they can push a little bit over 20% of visitors come back for a second Sunday. So just to put that in perspective, 20% is a great number. One out of five people coming back is very, very good. And so in this conversation, we want to unpack a little bit about why, like why, what's the difference between that 10 and the 20%? How do you double your visitor return rate? I guess we're going to focus a little bit more on some of the mistakes that we see churches making in these areas here. So I got to tell you, go ahead. I'm sorry, Ian.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, what I have seen, like, and for me as a pastor, this has been in my ministry, getting this stuff right has been some of our secret sauce, if you will, in seeing people really start to grow, like seeing our church grow. This has been an important part of that, really getting this visitor follow-up system right and changing some of the mistakes that we were making. Back in 2013, I took over a church in Madison, Wisconsin. We saw almost no visitors when I first took over, and we did some things to try and to get more visitors in the door. So we got it to a place where we were seeing about a small church, seeing about 10 to 15 visitors every single week. But what we really did is we really focused on that visitor follow-up process, from connect cards to follow-up sequences to having a starting point class where people would come in and get connected with the leaders of the church. And we saw our retention rate push up a little bit above that 20% when we actually measured it. And just want to share some of our knowledge and some of the things we picked up about this over the years. And I think it should be a good conversation.
Yeah. And a lot of churches, you know, they're always asking us, or we're discussing and consulting with them about their assimilation process. And this is a mm-hmm. big part of it here. Yeah. So this is good. So we have this titled the top eight church follow-up mistakes. So first one would be waiting too long to reach out to them after the service. So when is the good time to do that? How do you follow up? Is it 1 hour? Is it the next day? What is it? Yeah.
Yeah. So the answer to this for me, and we've tested lots of these different approaches here, it is after service on Sunday is the best time to reach out. And I'm not talking about, like, you know, going to knock on their door and saying thank you for coming or something like that. I'm not even talking about a phone call necessarily. It depends on the culture and, you know, the person, those kinds of things. But I think that if you can find a way to get an email or a text message, depending on the person, out to them, and we'll talk more about the medium in a little bit, but getting something out to them on Sunday afternoon, if you're having a Sunday morning service, that's the right time to do it. It's when things are freshest in people's minds and they are just coming off whatever their experience was, and there's no time for it to kind of be out of sight, out of mind for them. They're probably still thinking about it. Maybe the message is fresh in their minds. They're probably still thinking about the things they like, the things that they didn't. And some kind of a message from the pastor of the church. That's an important caveat, and a message from him. And it doesn't, we'll talk about strategies a little bit later with this here. It needs to, you can have someone who is an assistant to you as a pastor of a church that would help you with these kinds of things. So I'm not saying that your Sunday afternoons are now spoken for with you typing out individual emails to everybody, but having someone from your team as an assistant help you with these kinds of things, that would be appropriate. And I think the best time to do it for best results is Sunday afternoon.
Yeah. No, that's good. Yeah. And that might seem really soon to people, but you think about one thing that came to mind other than what you just were saying, Thomas, is the hustle and bustle, and just the obviously the next day you're into the work week again and focused on all the other things. So that's good stuff. So
this message, I'll say this, it's not some kind of thing that demands an enormous response or anything. It's usually just something to the effect of, hey, there's two different scripts that I use. One is if I met the person and one if I didn't. But basically it's the same thing. It's, hey, Joe, it was so good to meet you and your family this Sunday. I hope you had a great first experience at First Baptist Church. I want to let you know about next week. I'm going to be preaching a continuation on this message, and it's going to be diving a little bit deeper into this part of that aspect there. So we'd love to connect. If I can be praying for you for anything, please respond. Let me know how I can be praying. That's it. That's what the message is. So the script's a little bit different. If you didn't meet them and say, I'm sorry, I didn't meet you, let's make a point of connecting next week, some of those things. But yeah, it's not something that takes a lot of response. You're not trying to necessarily let's set up a time for coffee or anything like that. It's just kind of letting them know you're thankful they were there. And that little kind of touch point, we've seen that is the most important communication in the entire sequence.
Yeah, good. That's a good point. So next one would be, mistake number two is making your follow-up all about the church.
Yeah, exactly. So this is something that I see a lot of churches will do. They'll make the mistake of making it all about who you are. So you'll try to introduce them to what your core values and your vision are and what your mission programs are and talking about different ministry opportunities and all that stuff. And that's something that the conversation needs to happen. Just not right out of the gate. It's not the first thing. This is something that, and I understand that this is kind of counterintuitive, especially in the church, because we are trying to disciple people into understanding that it's not about them. It's about what you can do for others, right? That's kind of a central message of Jesus. And we're trying to disciple them in that. But the fact is that when people come to us, their question on their minds is this the right fit for me? Is this for me here? So helping them kind of see themselves in that and talking about how the church, like talking about them, is really what's most important. That's a saying that we have, and I think everybody's known this, is everybody's favorite topic is themselves. And so anytime you can kind of learn more about someone and get them to talk about them, their experience, who they are, that just really helps the opportunity of them getting connected with your church there. So trying to facilitate conversations, like that's why I asked in that initial sequence, like, how can I be praying for you? It's not about us, it's about what I can do for you. Like, and we want people to share some of that information with us. So turning the focus onto them is something that's really good. I've heard it said this way, is that the church is the only organization in the world that's more about the care for, it's more about people that are not yet members of the organization than it is for people that are currently members. So really living that out and helping people see that, I think that's going to be what's valuable to people.
Reminds me of the quote from the late great evangelist Billy Graham, they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So that's good. So, but next one would be making the mistake of using a one size fits all follow-up. So, you know, this is also in the vein of making the follow-up more personal.
Yeah.
Not just generic.
I really want to emphasize this. So I think that there are certainly ways to automate your follow-up that will feel, and there are parts you can do that with. But I think some of this initial conversation, the more authentic you can make it, the better results you will have. And the best way to make it authentic is to tailor it to the person that you're writing to. So I am a firm believer, as long as your church is of the size that you can handle this, of finding ways to personalize it is really important. So we've talked before, like the medium at our church, we change it based on the person. If we have a an 82-year-old first-time visitor, we probably aren't going to start off with a text message to them in most cases, because they're oftentimes not as likely to be using text. But I don't know, maybe we have some 80-year-olds in our audience that are going to tell us they love texting. So let me know down in the comments if that's you. But that's just our experience. We found that they, oftentimes people that are from the silent generation, or the greatest generation, I should say, that they often would prefer to receive a phone call. And so we have some situations where we do that. Whereas if you have a 21-year-old first-time visitor at your church, they will freak out if you call them on the phone in a lot of cases. They don't want to talk to anybody. And so they would much prefer a simple text message that says thank you, and not get too into their space with this kind of stuff. So you'll tailor it that way based on kind of the person you're talking to. And then I usually try to tailor it based on the ministry that they got involved with on that first Sunday, specifically with kids ministry, right? So if someone signed in kids on Sunday morning, you're probably going to have that information, and you want to make sure that you have that and talk about, hey, I hope you and your kids had a really good experience. I know in the kids ministry, they were talking about Noah's Ark and some of the sign of the rainbow and what that means. I wanted to see, you know, I hope they had a good experience. So tailoring your messaging for them specifically, I think will get you better results with the follow-up process.
That's good. That's good. So the next one would be forgetting to contact visitors in multiple ways. So this kind of lends itself to what channels should the church be using? So
yeah,
to follow.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the three that I use most, so email is definitely the most used one. I think that you'll probably want to, over the first week, have like three or four different emails that go out. That's generally what we try to do. And then after that, probably a weekly email for the first several weeks of after they visited it first time. So email is a channel that we use a lot. Text messaging is great. Sparingly, you don't want to send five text messages a week, but an initial text message is great for most people. That's something that most people use, and so that should be fine to do. And then occasionally phone calls. If you can get this information, we really love to actually use this fourth medium that I think is probably the kind of, it was something that really was great for us, is actually sending people something in the mail. Especially what we did is, for people, like, we would write them a handwritten card if adults came for the first time. A handwritten card, we'd write it out to them, just thanking them for coming. We would usually include a gift in that card just to, as a way to be a blessing to them and just kind of be generous right out of the gate and be good hosts. What I really love doing is for families that come and their kids come, giving each kid their own handwritten card. And in that, we would put like stickers and some of those kinds of things in the card. Kids don't get mail. And so when they get mail, it's a big deal. When they get something from a church and it has a gift like stickers and that kind of stuff, it just blew people away with that. And that was some of our thing that we were probably most proud of, is doing some of those kinds of things. So that's one of my favorite mediums. Now, the tricky thing about this medium is you have to get people's addresses. And if you ask people for their address, their fear a lot of times is, oh no, that means this pastor is going to come to my house and he's going to knock on my door, and I don't want to give them that information just yet. So in a lot of cases, they'll be less likely to give you any information if you're asking for their address. So you have to go with caution. And if you're going to ask for the address, I would say make sure that you make it very clear that, hey, fill out this card. No one's going to be coming and knocking on your door or anything like that. We just want to know kind of where our people are located. And we actually have a gift that we want to send your way. So just get that out there, and then you'll be much more likely to be getting their addresses and those things. And you do that. So that's kind of a, if you're up for it. But I think we've seen really good results with it, but just know that it could affect the number of info cards that you wind up getting from people.
Yeah, that's a good point. Good. So next one's a little different, but hopefully helpful. Not training a follow-up team. So this is about the follow-up team here. So,
yeah. So as we've been talking, I'm sure if you're like me, you'd be like, how am I supposed to do this and like do all of my other pastoring responsibilities that I have to do as a church, especially if we're small church pastors and you're just you doing it? Like, this is a lot that we're talking about. So yeah, you need to have help with this here. At our church, we have our office administrator and we have a couple of other volunteers that kind of run point on this. I'm the executive pastor, our lead pastor. He gets involved as he sees fit or if he feels led by the Spirit to, you know, initiate some kind of an initial conversation with somebody. But for the most part, this is completely handled by our office administrator and our volunteers. And we have trained them. We have written scripts. In fact, I'll tell you this. So we did a video a few months ago where I outlined and shared our exact script that I use at my church to do some of these things here. And we actually made it for a free download. So if you want to download our free visitor follow-up template, please do watch that video. There's a link in there to be able to download it. Grab those resources, but that's the training material. You want to give this to your team, make sure they know how to follow up properly. And then what I have found, and this is just kind of my experience, is that this is something that is, it can be uncomfortable for people to have to make these kinds of touch points. Like as a business, Ian, I know you kind of lead our sales team here at ReachRight. Like for most people, calling someone or reaching out for the first time or doing what you'd call like cold outreach, it makes people uncomfortable to do it. And they get worried about it. And so all that to say, you need to make sure that the team is actually doing what you're committed to doing. So let's say you decide we're going to have four touch points in that first week. Like, so four times that we do a text, we're going to do a handwritten card, we're going to do two emails, and maybe you say we're going to do a phone call. Like, you actually have to look and make sure that those are being done, because I just know from experience in multiple churches and working with hundreds of other churches that these balls get dropped all the time. So I'm not saying that you have to micromanage it necessarily, but you need to build a team and then you need to actually like kind of do spot checks every once in a while to make sure, hey, are we sending out these cards like we said we're going to do? Are we doing that third email? Like, is it going that right? So just kind of be consistent with following up, ask the right questions. I'm not talking about every day thinking about it, but, you know, once a month, just kind of do a check and make sure things are happening as you've committed to doing it after you've trained everybody on how to do it.
That's good. And that's actually a good segue to this next one, is treating the follow-up like a task and it not being relational. So again, especially if a team's doing it, you want to make sure they know relationship first, whoever's doing it. But we've mentioned that already, that this should be relational, not all about your church. So yeah, this is a good one, I think. So
it's tough. Yeah, I won't say much about this, but yeah, this is a task, but it's also relational. Like, you have to do it, like, there's going to be times where you don't feel like doing this, right? Like it's, you know, sending out those messages, whether it's you as the pastor or a volunteer team that's doing it, like there'll be times on Sunday afternoon where you're like, I don't want to go and send out seven, you know, text messages or emails to follow up with people. I don't want to do this. It is a task. And there's something, like, I feel that way about everything. There's times, I'll be honest, like there's times I don't feel like preparing a sermon. it's a task. I love doing it. And most of the time I really feel like it's inspiring and life-giving, but these are tasks and you have to, you know, prayerfully consider how to do it. But then, yeah, just remember that these are not just buttons that you hit send on and check them as check marks. They're actual people with actual souls that actually have eternity at stake with some of these conversations that are happening here. And remembering that and making it relational is something that's really important.
Yeah. And this next one we kind of touched on with the not making it all about your church. This is a little different though, so it's still a good one. Overwhelming guests with too much too soon.
Yeah.
So dumping everything on them, right? So,
yeah. So I think you really need to slow roll this a little bit. And remember, like we've been saying all this time, is that it's about relationship first and then inviting them into the life of the church. So no one is going to, if someone doesn't have any relationship with you as the pastor or people in your church, the odds of them becoming fully committed members of your church before that are negligible. So your first task is to build relationship. And once you've built relationship, then you invite people into the life of the church. So do not have giving calls to action on your follow-up messages. Probably don't even have, in your first couple of messages, I don't necessarily include like the new members class information on there yet. you know, several messages in, like after you've built some relationship and like known, they've seen how much you've cared, then it's time to start to invite people to those things. But yeah, absolutely. You know, kind of slow roll some of the next steps on them. I'm not saying don't get to them. We're all about call to action here, but start with relationship. That's the first thing.
Yeah, no, that's good. So that it reminds me also just of personal evangelism, right? So again, they don't care how much you know till they know how much you care, and genuinely loving them before you tell them that that eternity in flames may be happening here soon. So, so yeah, last but not least, missing the power of radical hospitality. So, so it's kind of what like we're just saying. So it's a good one to cap it up. Being good hosts, treating people like people, not acting like some big business. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think that's important. I think that we've really made a push for this. I read a book, and I'm encouraging my entire like greeting team and people at church to read. It's called Unreasonable Hospitality. Really great. It's about a kind of front of the house lead at a Michelin star restaurant in New York City, and his kind of story about how the experience that people in his restaurant got were just as important as the food that they were serving in this place. Really good book. I highly recommend it. But I think it really shaped the way I'm thinking about the way we are hospitable to people in our churches. And this is something that we cannot, you cannot just diminish. So I'm going to focus more on like the actual Sunday experience with this, but there's a place for hospitality all throughout this visitor follow-up process. But it starts right there on Sunday. And I think that one of the most important things to do is to give people a gift. That's something that you really need to do, and then not single them out, not point people out and make them stick out like sore thumbs, but really think about a gift. And I'm really stretching myself here right now and thinking about how we can be ultra generous with people. Here's what we're doing now. We just made this pivot as a church, is a brand new, like really like nice craft ice cream place just opened up right next to our church. And so we've been talking with the owner, and we basically have negotiated how we can get every first-time visitor a free ice cream when they come for the first time there. So trying to give them that. We want it to be like, this is like really nice. It's not like a, you know, it's not a McDonald's soft serve or something. It's like really nice ice cream. And so it's a cool experience that people have been wanting to try and those things. So we're trying to give that to every visitor. Find ways to be ultra generous. And if there's ways you can like go over and above for someone that's there for the first time, like train your greeters to have a really sensitive ear to what might make their first time visit even more special. We're really wrestling with some of this kind of stuff, but yeah, don't sleep on like kind of radical hospitality. I think it's really a big thing right now.
Those are great examples. And if y'all make that work, I'm sure the ice cream shop owner won't mind as well. It'll bring him in some more business and traffic.
Totally. It's a win-win.
That's right. That's right. That's good stuff.
So, cool. Yeah. Hope this has been helpful to you guys. This is just some of the things that we're finding. We've done lots of content around this topic here, but hopefully focusing on these mistakes. Hopefully you didn't find too many that you were making there, but drop us a comment, leave us a like. Let us know down in the comments if you found anything else that is hurting your visitor follow-up process. We'd love to hear about that. Thanks for being a part of the Reach Right family, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.